Culpable Case Review episodes are released on Friday. To binge the entire installment ad-free, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts. Now, let's start the show.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the individuals interviewed and participating in the show and do not represent those of Tenderfoot TV. All individuals described or mentioned in this podcast should be considered innocent until found guilty in a court of law. This podcast contains subject matter such as violence and other graphic descriptions, which may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Taisha's personality was unmatched. She was real. She would always keep it real with people, you know, just to let them know. And she would tell you, well, you might not like what I have to say, but I gotta let you know the truth.
This is Tarsha Harris, the mother of Taisha Starks, the victim in this story. Taisha was a vibrant 22-year-old college student who had recently become a mother to a beautiful baby boy. In many ways, her life was just getting started, but it was all taken away from her in February of 2023.
She deserves justice for what happened. My daughter's life mattered. She had her whole future ahead of her, and they robbed her of all of that.
A heated argument, which led to a custody exchange gone wrong, resulting in the death of one young mother. There's no debate over who shot Taisha Starks. The question is more about what happened that fateful day, and why. No matter what caused that violent altercation in the front yard of a Jackson, Tennessee home, a valuable life was taken. And Tarsha wants to know why the shooter hasn't been held accountable.
I've spoken with several other mothers that are going through the same situation. But my daughter will not be another case that you brush up under the rug. This situation with my daughter will change.
This is a Culpable Case Review of Taisha Starks.
My name is Tarsha Harris, and I am Taisha's mother.
When I met Tarsha earlier this year, the first thing I noticed about her wasn't her warm-heartedness or her wide-brimming smile, just like the one I saw in her daughter Taisha's pictures. No, the first thing I noticed was how incredibly calm she was for a mother who had lost her daughter less than a year ago. Not calm as in everything is okay. Not even close. That cloud still hangs. But calm like she's actively weathering the storm. You can tell she's been through a lot this past year, and that she's on a mission, one that's not quite complete, which is why she wanted to share Taisha's story with me in the first place, to get the word out. When I first heard what her story was about, and realized how many others out there could find themselves in a similar situation, I knew it was important to tell it. So I sat down with Tarsha to learn more about her daughter Taisha and the life she was building, which was taken from her far too soon. Here's Tarsha.
I live in Brownsville, Tennessee. I was a youth counselor before all of this happened, and I did work with at-risk youth. I enjoyed it. Once I graduated college, I just wanted to make a difference in young girls' lives. So I just started, you know, being a mentor and being a counselor at youth villages.
Tarsha tells me she's always worked in healthcare, but her passion was working with at-risk youth. She wanted to make a difference in the lives of kids who really needed someone in their corner. Being a mother and having a compassion for those in need, she felt that she would be an ideal candidate to help at-risk youth. After all, she raised two children of her own, a son who is now 21, and the elder, Taisha. And I could quickly tell just how much her kids mean to her.
My life revolved around my children, trying to make a better life for me and my children. Taisha was born on May the 20th, 2000. She was the joy of everyone's life. And everybody always wanted to keep her because she was the most beautiful baby. When she got grown, they always referred to her still as the little baby. She was a daddy's girl as well. She loved being around her father, and she was real jealous. My son is the youngest, but she always referred to my son as the oldest, and she was the baby. And she was beautiful. My daughter was the most gorgeous young lady, and she didn't care about putting on makeup or doing anything like that. And she would do that for pictures or something, but that wasn't her forte. She didn't have to put on any makeup or anything because she was beautiful.
Taisha, the baby, as she would liken herself, was a standout. With long dark hair, an unmistakable grin, an impeccable style, right out of a magazine. She was one of those people who just had this glow about them. But Tarsha tells me that beyond all her beauty, it was her personality that was unmatched.
Just a joy to be around, and just always wanted to just be a help to anybody that she could. And she loved just spending time with her friends. She always pushed them to do more. She didn't meet a stranger. She was loved by everyone.
Taisha had a knack for finding joy and making the most out of life. It was apparent in the way she loved her friends and family, but it was also apparent in the many accomplishments she had in her short life, starting at a young age and never slowing down.
She's been a cheerleader since she was 5 years old. She did gymnastics since she was 7. She's always been an honor student. She was in a beta club. She always said, "I just want to live, Mom. I just want to do this." And she always talked about venturing out and how she wanted to just travel the world. And instantly, she already had her plan in place, documented all of her goals that she wanted to set this year. She was at Austin Peay State University majoring in biology. She had got her pharmacy technician license. She was wanting to further her career. She always talked about becoming a dentist.
While she'd already made some major strides in life, Taisha was never one to settle. As Tarsha mentioned, she was actively looking to further her career. She was considering dentistry. She'd always talked about getting out of Tennessee and moving to Texas. She had her eyes on the city of Houston. But her work in Tennessee wasn't quite finished. And ultimately, she loved being there with her family. They were always very close.
She was always sticking up for her brother. She loved to look out for her family. And she would always, if I'm at work, call my cousin, Risha. "Have you talked to my mom?" "Well, let me know when she's on her way home, because I'm in her room. I'm in her bed." So she would always want to be in my bed and look at my TV in my room or go in my things. And then she'll try to put it back when I know, known that she's, used it. Just surprising me with gifts out of the norm, just coming in the house with flowers or just having something on my dresser when I wake up, or just sending me a text of how much she appreciates me, or just doing little silly things, dancing around the house or trying to, she could sing, but she would just do it for a joke to just, get me to laugh.
As you can probably tell by now, Taisha had quite the aura around her, a vibrant spirit, you could say. And not long ago, she caught the attention of a man named Bryce. I'm told the two had actually met in high school. But Taisha and Bryce hit it off, and quickly they formed a relationship. It started off great, according to Tarsha. They had been going strong for about a year, and that's when their dynamic suddenly changed.
After they found out that they were having a baby, he was scared. Their relationship started getting rocky because Taisha would tell him what she didn't want to be in a relationship with him any longer. She wanted to co-parent, and just like how young adults are, they would, have their ups and they'll have their downs. And once she told him that she just wanted to co-parent, he was like, well, he didn't want to co-parent. He wanted his baby to have a two-parent household. And I was just telling him, I wanted him to succeed, both of them to succeed as college graduates, because I know it's hard, for young parents, so I was going to do whatever I could.
Despite the toll it took on their relationship, the young couple did their best to stay positive amidst the stresses of co-parenting and attending college. Tarsha was there to help however she could. She was more than happy to lighten their load. Usually, that looked like spending more time with her grandson, so she wasn't one to complain. From the moment he was born, she knew she was always going to be there for him.
My grandson was born on January the 25th, 2022, and That was the most glorious day besides my children being born. I was there. I cut the umbilical cord. I held him first, and it was just a joy. He was with me every day. He would just always smile or just look for me, or when he learned how to crawl and walk, going in my room. It was just like he only was around me and Taisha, and it's just, she always used to say, "Mom, I'm not having any children." At first, she was not eager because she was in college. But once, you know, it came into the pregnancy and she had her baby, she loved him. She just adored him. And she always, even with her in class, she would call me a million times a day. "Has he eaten anything? Or is he asleep? Or what's he doing now? Where are y'all going today?" Or she loved her baby. And she was a great mom. She hated that she had to be in Clarksville and be in school. But I did. I sat my daughter and I sat Bryce down. And I talked to them for about 2 hours and told them that, you know, I was going to do whatever I had to do for both of them to succeed and to finish school.
At the time, Taisha was living in an apartment in Clarksville near campus. And according to Tarsha, Bryce was staying with his parents in Jackson. I'm told there was a verbal co-parenting agreement in place that the two would split time with their son throughout the week. According to Tarsha, Bryce's days were Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Taisha was to have him for the remainder of the week. And this was really the foundation for the tragedy that unfolded on February 20th, 2023. It was a Monday. Taisha had left Tarsha's home to take her son over to Bryce's so that she could go to school for the day. Tarsha says Taisha and Bryce met up somewhere in Brownsville, Tennessee. Bryce left with their son and went to his parents' home in the neighboring city of Jackson, and Taisha began her roughly 3-hour drive to Austin Peay State University for class.
And my daughter was on her way to Clarksville, and I was on my way to work. And she called me and said that Bryce was just kept calling her and said that she was going to have to make some more arrangements because he had class. She said she informed him, "Well, you knew you had class on Tuesday. You're going to have to figure things out the way I have to figure things out."
As the two go back and forth over the phone, frustrations mount. Taisha has class. Bryce has class. And despite his parents being home at the time, someone was going to need to watch their son. Exhausted from all the uncertainty and the stress of missing class, Taisha eventually decided she was going to turn the car around, head to Bryce's parents' home in Jackson, pick up her son, and call it a day.
You could tell she was upset. She's like, "Mom, I'm just tired of them." And she was like, "Mom, I can't focus. They keep texting me, keep calling me. I'm gonna go get my baby." And I said, "Taisha, be careful." And I did call Bryce's mom to ask what was going on. I said, "What's going on? I said, why are y'all giving my daughter such a hard time?" And I said, "Y'all should not even be calling her, you know." And Bryce was on the phone. He was very irate with me, just going back and forth. And yeah, we did get into a heated argument, me, the mom, and Bryce. And I hung the phone up. And that's when Taisha told me she was on her way. And I said, "Taisha, be careful."
At this moment, Tarsha had no idea that this would be the last time she'd ever speak with her daughter. She went on with her workday, assuming she'd hear from Taisha sometime later, but that call never came. Instead, sometime around 7 p.m., she received word from her sister that Taisha never picked up her son that day. Instead, she had been shot and killed in the process.
I just went numb, and I just started screaming, and I just immediately just ran out of my job and just left. My job is an hour and 30 minutes. I know I made it by the grace of God. I drove the emergency lane or however I could to get there. And I was just praying all the way that, you know, my daughter was okay. And once I arrived on the scene, I don't know, I just had this feeling that it wasn't good. I just seen the ambulance and police, just seen people everywhere, and my brother and him just try to help, you know, hold me back. They wouldn't let me get there. And it was a lot that transpired. I just know that I remember asking, you know, "Where was my daughter?" And the investigator came in and told me that Taisha didn't make it.
Mm-hmm. Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
So what exactly transpired that day? Well, it's kind of hard to say. The short of it is, Taisha was shot and killed while at Bryce's parents' house, attempting to pick up her son. Though, admittedly, the story is not that simple. But thankfully for Tarsha, she would get a more thorough account of the events, because Taisha was smart enough to bring a couple friends, or witnesses in this case, along with her that day. And they remained in the car for the duration of the incident.
The witnesses in the car informed me that when they arrived to the home, they parked on the side where the mailbox was, like parked on the street, like, and Taisha went and knocked on the door.
As Taisha stands, supposedly just off the porch, the front door opens. But it's not Bryce that answers. Instead, it's Bryce's father.
And when he came to the door, him and Taisha was exchanging words. He was telling her, like basically cursing at her and, you know, saying things to her. And she told him, shut the fuck up, bitch ass nigga. I came over here to get my son. Where's my son at? And he went back in the house. They said he wasn't in the house in no time. And he came off of the porch and he was shooting.
Now, I want to take a moment here to explain something, as it has become a point of contention in this case, and that is that Taisha was wielding a stun gun during this incident. The stun gun was given to her by one of her friends as a means of protection because of how hostile their exchanges had been leading up to this. According to a report from WREG, who contacted the Madison County Sheriff's Office about the case, they were told that, quote, the disturbance escalated, and witnesses corroborated that Mrs. Starks arrived with a stun gun and was actively arching the device when she was shot. Now, whether the witnesses were the people inside the home or neighbors, I'm not sure, as that was not made clear in the press release. But according to Taisha's friends, she never pulled the stun gun. They claim that nothing physical had occurred prior to the shooting, only that some harsh words were exchanged. And then, in the blink of an eye, shots rang out.
He shot 5 times. He hit my daughter in the forearm and in the chest. A bullet went in the car where the 2 witnesses were in the car. They didn't know that Taisha had been shot. She tried to run on the side of the car, went on the passenger side and got in, and she drove away. That's when she said, I can't, and she passed out.
Somehow, Taisha was able to make it back to the car and take off down the street, but unfortunately, she only managed to drive a short distance before succumbing to her injuries and crashing into a mailbox. The fatal shot had pierced her lungs. Tarsha is practically at a loss when it comes to describing the events of that day. More importantly, the why, which is understandable. Regardless of the facts, she is firm in her belief that this was a senseless, unjustified killing. So as time passed, her focus started to shift away from the people involved and towards the Madison County Sheriff's Office. She wants to know why no one is being held accountable.
The system has failed. And from day one, I just feel like they've treated me and my family like we're the criminals. He was never booked. He was never charged with anything. And they let him go. And they didn't let me know anything. The Madison County Sheriff's Department informing that the DA, Jody Pickens, informed them that they had to have more evidence. And I'm like, more evidence? You have 2 eyewitnesses.
Frustrated with the authorities' early handling of the investigation, Tarsha quickly made the decision to take matters into her own hands. She got a sense of where things were headed. Nowhere. And she wasn't about to sit idly by and allow it.
I went back over in the neighborhood a couple of days after that, and I did speak with several of the neighbors. I had one neighbor that reached out to me. He informed me that He called 911 and he saw Bryce's parents standing out on the porch. He was behind my daughter's car. So he saw her car swerving after the incident happened. The sheriff department hasn't even spoken with that neighbor. I've also been doing flyers, just trying to get, you know, information in regards to my daughter. I did a protest at the DA's office. I have spoken on several news outlets in regards to getting my story out there. I also spoke with just different activists in Memphis, Tennessee to join me in this obtaining justice for my daughter.
One of those advocates she's talking about is a woman named Heather Grew, who stumbled on this case by chance.
Miss Heather has been marvelous. From day one, she's been very supportive. She's always just encouraged me to don't give up, to keep fighting, to get justice for my daughter. She's not my attorney, but she has not treated me any different from anything. She's just always been transparent with me, just giving me the real facts in all the situations. I'm very grateful, very grateful.
When Heather first met Tarsha over the phone, she didn't intend to become an ally in her fight for justice. But after meeting, she knew she couldn't walk away from this.
My name is Heather Grew. I'm an attorney. I practice family law, and I worked in the family law field as a paralegal while going to undergrad in law school. I do not practice criminal law. I am not the attorney of record on any matter related to this, but I do have permission from the victim's mother, Tarsha Harris, to discuss the details of this matter.
Heather tells me she's still adjusting to life as an attorney, having only been licensed for a few years now. Legal work was something she got into later in life, but it's been a welcome career change practicing family law. With that being her area of expertise, you might be wondering why she'd be speaking on this matter, a homicide. So I'll let Heather explain how she got connected with Tarsha.
I served on a mental health advisory board locally that I was invited to because I speak at local abuse groups helping victims navigate the legal system. And the owner of the therapy group that created the board, she called me late one night. I answered it, and she said that she had a woman that she was speaking with that had some legal questions, and that would I be willing to talk to her? So she put Tarsha Harris on the phone on three-way, and they were asking me questions about a juvenile court matter regarding a small child.
At first, Heather just wanted to know why this older woman was asking questions about a toddler. She could tell by the age in her voice that she likely didn't have a toddler of her own. Of course, she'd go on to learn that the child was Tarsha's grandson, and that she'd been fighting for her right to see him ever since the death of her daughter. More on that later. Seeing as Heather practices family law and often advises her clients on how to avoid confrontational custody exchanges, Taisha's story left her absolutely floored. But it also lit a fire in her. She's followed this story and stayed in touch with Tarsha ever since.
Sometime in maybe late September, early October, she told me that the district attorney here had told her that he was planning to take the murderer to the grand jury. And I checked one morning and found the results of the October 2nd grand jury meeting, and the man's name was not on it, which means he was indicted. So I shot her a text and said, hey, congratulations, maybe now you'll get some movement on this and there will be some justice. And she said, no, the district attorney told me that he didn't put his name on there and doesn't have to, and the grand jury didn't indict. And I do not practice criminal law. I couldn't tell you what the DA looks like here, but it just flew all over me because essentially what this case is about is a woman that went to pick up her child and was killed for doing that. You know, I advise my clients how to do it safely, and the sheriff's department fails my clients. It's just been ignored, and she's done everything she knows to do and thought, okay, maybe if we can get a larger platform, this will help.
Heather was actually the first person to tell me about Taisha's story, and she felt that reaching out to try and get Taisha's story some more exposure was one small way that she could help. I asked her to break down the case for me, just as she did in her original email.
Taisha Starks was a student at Austin Peay. She had a small child with a man named Bryce that was a student at University of Memphis. So they had tried to work out a situation where maybe he was getting the child half the week and she would get him the other half. So they tried this, and she dropped off the child at the father's parents' house, drove up to her college, and pretty much by the time she got there, he was saying, come get this kid. She was like, your dad figured out.
As you know, a heated argument breaks out between them, with even the parents on each side getting involved. Eventually, Taisha makes the decision to go pick up her son from Bryce's parents' house.
She calls her mom and says, I'm going to go get him. And her mom says, take some friends with you. They ride with her down there. One of them has an infant child with her. They're in the back seat. So she shows up at the house, pulls up in the front yard. The house is very close to the street. The yard is very small. She gets out. She tells her friend to record it.
And one of Taisha's friends did, in fact, record the incident. We were able to get a copy of the recording, and with the family's permission, I'm going to play it. But first, a warning. This audio is very difficult to listen to, and includes profanity and graphic violence that may not be suitable for all listeners. If this could be triggering for you, I recommend skipping forward about 3 minutes.
So, from my understanding, she walks up and knocks on the door and then backed off the porch before anybody came out. You can hear in the audio that it starts off with her saying, you know, they said they got to get his stuff together. They won't even come to the door.
Now they can't even open it though.
As Taisha stands, allegedly just off the porch, Bryce's father opens the front door.
His father comes outside and she says, where's my kid? Where's my kid? Give me my kid. He says something like, don't come over here. And she tells him to shut up, but in a worse way. And he gets angry with her, says a couple more things. She pops off again. And then he goes inside the house and shuts the door. She did have a stun gun in her hand. It was very small. It was inside of her hand.
While there's no denying that Taisha possessed a stun gun during the incident, I have no way of knowing whether Taisha actually used it on someone or caused physical harm in any way. But in the recording, just after Bryce's father returns opening the front door, you can clearly hear Taisha arch the device, as was reported by the Madison County Sheriff's Office. And the moment she does, Taisha, shots are fired.
Taisha, oh.
Put her arm up to protect herself, and there's a bullet hole through her forearm. She turned to run on the second one. He shot her under her armpit. It went through both lungs at a downward angle because he was coming off the porch into the yard shooting at her. He shot into the car, and she ran around the car. The passenger side door was open, so she jumped over her friend into the driver's seat, hit the gas. Did not let off the gas. She hit a mailbox. I think she rolled into a tree, and she was already dead. And all of that happened when she showed up to the time that she died. It was about a minute and 14 seconds.
When it comes to the events that led to Taisha's death, it's impossible to say exactly what happened, as there seems to be conflicting accounts from witnesses, and we only have an audio recording of the incident, no video. But determining what happened on that property that day matters in many ways, as this is a case that hinges on Castle Doctrine, what the National Conference of State Legislatures describes as the right to use reasonable force to protect against an intruder in one's home. I'll let Heather expand on this.
So, like I said in the beginning, I'm not a criminal lawyer, but I did take criminal classes in law school, and I did work for a very prominent criminal attorney when I came out of law school. And this is what the Castle Doctrine in our state is. It's Tennessee Code Annotated 3911611. It's called self-defense. I'm going to go over a few of the definitions inside of it so y'all can have an idea of how it works. The first section, A, is definitions, and one of them is curtilage. And they describe curtilage in this statute as an area surrounding a dwelling that is necessary, convenient, and habitually used for family purposes and activities associated with the sanctity of a person's home. So that means a lot when we get to the residence definition, because a lot of people think your castle is only your home. The residence means a dwelling in which a person resides either temporarily or permanently, or is visiting as an invited guest, or any dwelling, building, or other opportunities within the curtilage of the residence, so the yard.
In layman's terms, what Heather is getting at here really centers on that last line you heard regarding the curtilage of the residence. Basically, you can't look at the scene here as just the house itself. By definition, the incident took place at a residence, which includes the curtilage of said residence. In other words, the yard, which is reportedly where Taisha was shot. And this matters when you get into the law of self-defense. In some states, if a person feels threatened or that their life is in danger, they must make an attempt to retreat, say, inside their house, before using self-defense. But Tennessee follows Stand Your Ground law, which allows individuals to defend themselves without first attempting to retreat. And to add to the complexities, possibly the biggest subject for debate is around the notion of perceived threat. In other words, what degree of danger warrants the use of deadly force? I asked Heather if she believes that the stun gun Taisha was carrying rises to that degree of danger.
Stun guns are legal in this state. They don't even need a permit. So there's nothing that defines if it's lethal or non-lethal force, I've seen in my research. You have to be in danger that creates a belief of imminent death, serious bodily injury, or grave sexual abuse, and honestly believe to be real at the time, and the belief of danger is founded upon reasonable grounds.
Heather later clarified in an email that she believes what the statute is trying to say is that the shooter in this case is presumed to have held a reasonable belief of imminent death or serious bodily injury. But she also points out that in another section it states the presumption does not apply if the person against whom the force was used was there to pick up their child, which is key because it would shift the burden back to the original person using self-defense to prove they had a reasonable belief of imminent death or serious bodily injury. So you could say that there's some ambiguity around this law, and that's been a major sticking point when it comes to Castle Doctrine and Stand Your Ground laws. Who gets to say what degree of danger an individual felt they were in when they decided to use deadly force? It's up to the courts to decide. And no decision is likely to appease all parties because while the ability to stand one's ground can save lives, it can also take lives, as we've learned in this case. Which is why Heather recommends her clients meet at police departments to do custodial exchanges. And while that's not what Taisha and Bryce elected to do on February 20th, 2023, interestingly, Bryce did place a call to police that day prior to Taisha coming to the house. And Heather worries this has complicated matters even further.
The father of the child called the police department 3 hours before she got there and said, y'all need to come. I don't know what he was thinking. I just know the call was made. And it's my understanding that from what Tarsha has told me, that the police told him that was too big of a window. They weren't coming. And, you know, I advise my clients to meet in police department parking lots, because a lot of people don't want to act out there. And I know that police officers don't have the time to come to every one of my clients' exchanges, or that's all they would do. But I don't know. The fact that he called, though, I think is a pretty serious factor here. I think they fear some liability.
While Heather was able to give a lot of insight around Castle Doctrine and the laws that factor into this case, something else I was curious to learn was what investigative work the Madison County Sheriff's Office has performed in this case, if it could help explain the perceived inactivity thus far, and how it could play a factor in this case moving forward.
So this is what I understand has been done in the investigation. According to what the district attorney and the investigator has said to the family, the phones were taken the night of the murder. And the district attorney claimed in March that there were outstanding search warrants that he had not been able to serve, or maybe subpoenas, for phones. But further in that conversation, he admits he had already downloaded these phones. The only one that he claimed he could not get into was Taisha's. Said that there was a code on it, and that if he continued to crack the code, it would completely delete and wipe the phone clear. It was an iPhone. And they said, well, what if she said something to another person in her phone? Okay, let's think she did. What if she did tell a third person? What if she did say something terrible? Unless that third person conveyed it to the murderer prior to her showing up, it doesn't matter. They did bring the two girls in, and they asked them a bunch of questions separately. The DA claimed that one of the witnesses had a different version of events that happened in the beginning, but then she said a different version that kind of matched everyone else's. And the way I look at that, and this is what I would tell my clients in any family law case, like, you can tell me your version and they can tell me their version, but the truth is going to be that recording. These were young girls that were in shock and had just watched their friend die. They probably couldn't remember everything correctly.
And this here is what makes the situation so frustrating for Heather. There were witnesses. There's a recording. Not to mention, there was a child inside the home and another inside the vehicle when the shots were fired. When you add it all up, it's troubling, to say the least. And for Heather and Tarsha, the fact that no charges have come from it is all the more troubling.
They brought the killer in the station the night of the shooting, and the investigator says that the district attorney got up and called them and said, let him go. Y'all, he's got a valid defense. Y'all need to do some more investigating. And the most frustrating part is, for myself as an abuse victim and for my clients that are abuse victims, if there is no resolution to this, our lives are in danger, even more than they could have been before.
Heather tells me that getting justice for Taisha is just one part of this. The other part centers around Taisha's son, Tarsha's grandson. I'm told that she has only been able to see him a couple of times in the year following Taisha's death. One of the main reasons being that he's no longer living in the state of Tennessee.
The district attorney allowed the killer and the child's father and the child to move out of the state and didn't tell anybody where they were going. He claimed that there was a threat to these people's lives put on Facebook, and there's no record. And I don't know why a person being investigated for a murder should be allowed to move anywhere.
And this has actually become the biggest point of contention for Tarsha as of late. While she wants justice for her daughter, she also understands that there's no getting her back. But thankfully, her grandson wasn't caught in the crossfire that day, though he easily could have been. Tarsha obviously deserves to be in her grandson's life, but after the district attorney allowed the child to be moved to another state, she hasn't been given that opportunity.
There is just a cloud of questions around this. I've spoken with other attorneys that do practice criminal law around here, and they're like, this is not the district attorney. Like, this is not how he acts. He always jumps on things. I don't know what's happening, but hopefully something will happen so that this man will have to answer for what he's done. You know, if he has that type of anger problem that I heard in the recording, is that child safe? In the juvenile court matter regarding the minor child, hopefully Tarsha can get a set time, a set schedule, because the only thing left on the earth that has her daughter's blood in it is that child. And, you know, she raised that child with her daughter. And is the child traumatized? It's been taken from his mom and his grandmother. I hope that she gets something set up and the judge gives her something that she can look forward to, maybe seeing him at least once a month. Hopefully she gets something like that.
In closing, I also wanted to get Tarsha's take on everything. What does she want to see happen with her daughter's case? What does she want to get off her chest? She maintained her typical calm demeanor, but she also didn't hold back.
The system has failed. My daughter, the DCS has failed my grandson. I feel like that the Madison County Sheriff Department, the DA, Jody Pickens, did not do a thorough investigation that night. You have two eyewitnesses. What else do you need? You guys robbed me of my daughter. You robbed my grandson and your grandson of his mom. You robbed him of his mom being able to hear his first word, mother, mom. You guys robbed him of her being able to take him to preschool, his first day of preschool. You guys robbed him of his mom being able to see each milestone in his life. I would want my grandson to know that his mom loved him and she was doing everything in her power to make a better life for them, always looking out for his best interest and always putting him first instead of putting herself first. And I would just want him to know that his Gigi is not gonna give up, that I'm going to fight for him. I am his voice right now, and I'm gonna do everything I can to get him back home safely where he belongs. And I'm not gonna stop until my daughter and my grandson receives justice. I am their voice now. I'm their voice.
Tarsha, along with the rest of Taisha's family, ask that you please take the time to share this story with others to help get the word out. If you're interested in learning more about Taisha's story, Tarsha has actually created a podcast of her own titled A Hearty Heart. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts, and this is another way that you can help support this family in their ongoing fight for justice. And lastly, if you have any information about the death of Taisha Starks, please contact the Madison County Sheriff's Office at 731-423-6000. That's it for this episode. Thanks for listening.
Culpable is a production of Tenderfoot TV in partnership with Odyssey, written and hosted by Dennis Cooper. Executive producers are Donald Albright and Payne Lindsay. Our senior producer is John Street. Our producer is Jamie Albright. Supervising producers are John Street and Tracy Kaplan, with additional production by Eric Quintana, Annie Rustin, and Jordan Foxworthy. Editing by Jaja Muhammad and Sydney Evans. Mixing, mastering, and sound design by Dayton Cole. Our theme song is by Dirt Poor Robbins, with additional scoring by Makeup and Vanity Set and Dayton Cole. Our cover art is by Drew Bardana. Sources for this episode include WREG, WBBJ, and WKRM. Special thanks to the teams at UTA, Beck Media and Marketing, and the Nord Group. You can follow us on social media at Culpable Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please take time to follow, rate, and review. Your feedback is greatly appreciated. For ad-free listening and exclusive content, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Culpable Case Review. Tune back in for additional episodes releasing each Friday. For ad-free listening and exclusive bonus content, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts.